The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Today on Lulz, we are going to debrief the wild interview last week with J-Mac. We've gotten lots of comments and feedback on that show, so we'll hit on that. And also, as you've noticed on the thumbnail, the Sim Wars are hitting its stride here within the DFS site street. So we'll break down the ongoing arms race for the best Sims in DFS.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in 1 for yes, 2 for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
Brian, you've had a busy day on Twitter. I saw something about a DFS journalist never revealing their sources. What was that in reference to?
That's right. Are you doubling up, Pete, on your echo?
Am I? You getting echo from me?
You know what it was, Pete? I left the YouTube open. Again.
Hey, two of me, man. Sounds pretty good. No, what was your tweet referencing?
Oh, I don't know. It wasn't referencing. Oh, it was No House Advantage. No one ever responded to me. I sent a tweet out, I don't know, 4 days ago, asking if anyone knows what's going on with No House Advantage. I don't know if you pay attention to this at all, Pete, but
yeah,
they're like a prop site, kind of one of those new pick'em sites.
Yeah.
And their account is, I haven't checked today, but their account was set to private on Twitter, and people are complaining they haven't been paid out in like 2 weeks at this point. And I don't know. I was just wondering if anyone knew anything.
Had you ever played on there?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I hadn't. I mean, I had heard about them going belly up, but I don't know if I've known anyone who's played on there. Anyone in the chat get action down on No House Advantage? Was there any news stories about it?
Nothing that I've seen. No one linked me to a story. No one messaged me at all. So.
Yeah, their site appears to still be up here. If you Google News, No House Advantage, you get a December 2022 promo code from Roto Grinders. No House Advantage promo code, $100 sign up. Fantasy Lads, Odd Shopper, Stochastic. Seems pretty out of date here. But did you have any other macro thoughts about a site like that going under?
I mean, it's just bound to happen.
Yeah.
At some point. And I'm fine. I mean, obviously I'm not fine with people who are going to lose money, but you got to kind of expect that to happen. It's happened to me with, what was the old one? Fantasy Aces. I didn't have a ton of money on there, but multiple thousands, I think, on that site. And that went under just in the DFS poker. Obviously back in the day, sites would go under all the time.
Yeah, the I was just listening to Jeremy Levine, Underdog CEO. He was on Adam's podcast over at ETR, and you know, was saying they were talking about even a company like Penn, you know, who theoretically had all of this momentum with the Barstool backing to compete with some of the big dogs in the sports book. And even they are struggling to hit their numbers. And it was more just as an example of how hard it is for sports books to replicate the existing sports book model and have success. If you're not innovating, if you're not doing something new, it's like really hard to compete with the big boys.
Yeah, I bet. I bet it's pain. People just think these businesses are just operate themselves and they're taking all these profits, you know, like not the, there's tons of effort.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think too about like the responsibility that sites have to vet these sites that they're promoting? Because it's a common thing. All these content sites make money, even myself included with Underdog, when you convert users, you know, an affiliate. And there's, you know, is there a level of responsibility of, hey, if I'm getting people on the site, that there's not risk that they're going to flop and run away with your money?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one, because I kind of like, my first thought is no, like how, what are you supposed to like get the QuickBooks information for every company that mm-hmm. wants to advertise with you? And, you know, I think like CNN or big companies are held to a different standard. But really what happens if it does go under is basically those are the people who got the money, the affiliates.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's tough. It's not really your fault, I don't think. Because even if you did, like, this would never happen. But even if you did, like, oh, let me see some of your financials, they'd just lie to you if they're right. Scammers.
It pretty much just comes down to, like, are you willing to put your reputational risk on the line? Right. Because at some point, people are going to be like, hey, you burned me once, like, leading me
yeah.
to the thing. I'm going to lose confidence in your ability to provide me with platforms or offers that are actually good.
I mean, and even people who criticize other people, like Doug Polk, didn't he like criticize a bunch of people, and eventually one of his like crypto just like went under.
Yeah, it's exactly what Andrew. And what was interesting about that for me is just, you know, Doug has done very well, has lots of revenue streams. I don't think he needed to take that deal purely for cash, although I'm sure he got paid handsomely for it. But the reputational risk there, he is going to have to reckon with that for a long time, because you can even go in his mentions on a random tweet and people are referencing the CoinFlex stuff. So it is an interesting thing of like, you know, weighing the risk reward of some of those partnerships. The other thing as like a user, right? And we all went through this through the crypto and NFT bull runs of like not leaving your money on sites because you didn't know what was going to happen. And it's probably a good rule of thumb too, because one thing that successful sports bettors do, right? They have money on all these accounts. You got to be able to take advantage of opportunities, arbitrage, line shop, all of that. But when you start to add in some downside risk of not being able to get your funds back, it is something to consider.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. It's just kind of part of your edge too. Like, yeah, if you have like 5% edge, well, there's also a chance that some of these smaller sites are going to go under. So really your edge is less than that. Like, who knows how much further less, but as long as they have the like PayPal framework or some sort of banking option, you could kind of take your money off and on every day.
Mm-hmm.
It's when the banking is really hard to do and you kind of got to leave it on there, leave a bankroll on there. Like back in the poker days, that would kind of happen sometimes.
Yeah.
That you can get burned. So, but I guess what I heard too was they were doing some things like they had a lot of hard, I don't know if any of this is true. Like I said, no one responded to me, but they had a lot of hard bonus playthroughs. So mm-hmm. like if you deposit money, it's harder to get it off. And then now that it's harder to get, you can't do that strategy of, you know, if I'm going to bet $200 today, I'll just put $200 on, bet it. If I win, take it off and put what I want tomorrow. Right. So that's kind of a a double-edged sword there where you can't take your money off and then they go under. That sucks.
And I guess, I mean, based on you, I feel like your Twitter demographic, you know, if no one from your Twitter demographic had literally any thoughts, because I feel like if you would have put a comment up about, I don't know, UFC strike, like the Dapper NFT thing, like a few people would have been like, oh yeah, I had some money on there. Like, can't get up. Like, you would have got the fact that no one in your audience or our collective circle was impacted by that probably speaks to why they went belly up.
Yeah, true. True. I wonder with no house advantage, I wonder what that meant too. Like, maybe their rake was really low. Oh, I think they had a lot of overlay as a promotional tool. And maybe maybe they just didn't do the math right and then giving away all that money.
That's what Parker says here. Go. Yeah. 50% overlay every slate and they weren't growing and was wondering how they lasted so long, which is definitely like, I mean, what Yahoo, even with their DFS product, was doing that a ton. All those rake free contests, a lot of overlay rake free contests, because they were just trying to acquire users.
Yeah, they're really conservative though. And like for the open today, they had like 20 max was their big one, which is really small for a major. So like they're pretty conservative on pricing their tournaments. And they actually have users. They have plenty of users on Yahoo. So, and Yahoo is on like a 0% chance of going under because they're a huge company that would clearly much rather just pay out this small amount of DFS money rather than get sued for their parent company, you know? So Yahoo, you're totally, totally safe. But yeah, they weren't, I don't think they were doing as much as no house advantage, especially when you compare like all the other aspects of the company.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about fallout from the JMac interview. Not quite as much interest as the Run Pure Sports Ship It Nation beef, although still a ton of interest. I feel like I even got more DMs, personal DMs about this show than I did other ones. Like, holy cow, that interview was wild. All of that stuff. What is some of the feedback you've gotten since we did the show last week with JMac and him having that battle with his developers and launching a new site?
Yeah, less interest for me than our other drama shows, but there's still the one thing that sticks out for me too is he has a dedicated group of haters, as you can clearly see if you've been following this at all, but not one person has provided any concrete evidence of their claims that we all brought up on the show. And so some people were harping on like, no, he owes people money or something like that. They just don't want to say it. So like, you know, maybe that could be true. There's no way for us to prove anything he says. He's definitely a talker. So like you could tell he can talk his way out of a situation.
Yeah. Here's a question. Do you think if he could watch the interview in the future and then decide if he wants to come on and do the interview that happened, do you think he still would do it? Like, do you think he's happy he came on?
That's a good point. I think he would. I think he seems like an any press is good press type of dude.
Yeah, I was trying to think through that because I think obviously as much as I'd like to imagine that Hoop and JMac, like the show, want to chop it up with us, I think there's an obvious element of marketing their new sites. We have an audience that plays DFS that is hyper engaged. But I also then wonder, I'm like, how much of our audience is actually looking around for a new DFS site, watches those interviews and says, hey, I want to go sign up at Ship It Nation. I want to go sign up at a Really Good Picks or whatever. That's where like the marketing angle for them kind of falls through for me.
Where else are you going to go? I also think like there's the kind of typical corporate conversion rate and stuff like that doesn't necessarily apply. Like just the fact that 15 to 20,000 people saw Hoop's story. Like those people like otherwise wouldn't have known that he has a new site even.
True.
And they could be like, oh, I'm going to cancel my run pier and go to hoop now.
Like you basically use it as a press release, lulls as a press release than an actual like marketing thing. Yeah.
Like we talk about with like bits, you know, like when people complain that you do your bits too much or something, it's like homeboy, not everyone sees his bits. Like he's got, like, you got to like get it out there as much as you can, because what percentage of your audience actually sees things you type or say or text or whatever. And so like just the fact that they can get on a show and get that many views or listens, I think that helps just awareness of it. I bet they got a decent amount of subs from our show. J-Mac, I don't know. Maybe I just feel like Hoop came off a lot of people, like I think actually changed their mind who didn't like him and then started to like him.
I think he came across like if you looked at like polling favorability rankings, I think Hoop stock went up. Whereas the feedback I got, people found J-Mac to, I think his percept, the way people perceive him, I think went down a little bit.
Yeah. I think that that's right. It's hard to differentiate between his dedicated group of haters though, because they're pretty vocal. True. So, it's hard to say.
I think partly too, and if you think about the differences, like a lot of Hoop stuff was like, and again, I'm sure there's stuff he left out, whether for legal purposes or he didn't want to share, but the tenor of that interview was like a chronological telling of a story. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of like hitting his marks. Then this happened, then this. J-Mac, that interview was less about like, tell us the exact blows, because then the whole second half of the interview were about these other things, questions that the community has had about him. Yeah. And I felt like there was less, I don't know, consistency or conviction in how he delivered those answers, where it felt somewhat like a politician, someone filibustering a little bit, trying to explain a caveat that then needed further explanation. It just wasn't as believable as Hoop's narrative.
Yeah. And Hoop also couldn't, like said multiple times, I can't talk about certain things, where J-Mac could talk about whatever he wanted. And it still didn't make a lot of sense in some set. Like the two big ones were the disagreement with the, what's his name? The IT guy or whatever. And then the other one was his banning or whatever you want to call it from DraftKings and then using someone else's account. So like the first one with the tech guy, it still doesn't make a ton of sense to me. Like if you put yourself in the shoes of a scammer guy, like who's just trying to make a buck off of some young kid, like why would he rock the boat so hard? Like why wouldn't he try to let that deal go through and then get his 50% or something? Why would he right at the end then go, no, I'm going to try to charge even more money? It didn't really make a whole ton of sense to me. Like this guy was just doing like barely anything or nothing and making his cut or charging the fee for his company is like, I don't know. It just seems like such a, what's the word? Not like diabolical, like just like a dumb criminal. Like you're like, you're trying to get caught, you know, you're overdoing it so much. You're going to ruin the golden goose. So like, I didn't fully understand it. And then the fact that he's like so certain the guy won't respond or talk or DM or come on a show or anything is weird. Mm-hmm. Like how are you so absolutely certain?
Yeah.
I feel suspicious.
Yeah. Well, that I would say that whole dynamic is kind of similar to the Hoop stuff, right? Where it's like, there's still parts of this story that like don't add up, you know? It was very funny at the end that J-Mac wouldn't weigh in on the Run Pure Sports and Ship It Nation thing there. Right. I saw some conspiracies popping up on Twitter and stuff that now I don't feel comfortable commenting on, but that was a very interesting response to one of our questions. Yeah.
He should have just commented on it. That was dumb, but whatever.
Yeah.
That was funny. The idea of, so I see someone in the chat, saying that he believes the IT store or whatever. Like, I understand. I believe that there's like, you could say there's a bad person who's screwing someone over. Like, that's believable. I get it. I just like the way he described the circumstances didn't make. It makes sense. Like, it's a clear story he's telling. Like, I understand it. It's just like, I feel like this guy is like such like villainously dumb, like that he would push it to these extremes when he was just had this golden goose. And the worst thing that can happen is he's going to get 50 or 40% or whatever, 15% or whatever his cut was of the new company or the buyout.
Yeah.
And then maybe even like you charge some more money in the transition. Mm-hmm. Some, who knows, like why push it that far and like try to force him to do things and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know. It seems strange.
Well, and another thing, like just gauging like the feedback, like if you read the comments and stuff, like almost everyone's reactions had to do more with his stuff about DraftKings and whether he's able to play and like how him getting banned or whatever, self-excluded, how that all unfolded and kind of some of his other stuff like over the years with his kind of marketing style. Like it seems like most people are responding to that. There wasn't a lot of people who were like really interested in like, you know, going combing through his story with the tech developers. Everyone, like no one was pushing back on that, I guess.
Right. Which makes it a good story. Right.
Right.
Like what? Yeah. No, I got the tech guy was screwing me. Like,
right.
Okay. Well, I guess that makes sense to start your new site then. Mm-hmm. So it's a believable story too.
Yeah.
But like, what are we going to do? I mean, probably something like that happened. Too, like he could just exaggerated, you know, maybe he had some tech guy who's used to charging $200 an hour, $500 an hour and just not doing much, but still charging like lawyers I've dealt with in the past. These people fucking rip you off, you know? So it's completely a believable story, I suppose. But yeah, people weren't that interested in it. The self-exclusion thing was definitely a weird one for me. So like Travis is in the chat here. And mm-hmm. for people who don't know, Travis is a professional DFS player, as am I. And we talk with our reps a decent amount, not a ton. I rarely talk to them. Like I, one word answers usually, you know, like, but I can understand why you'd talk.
You're
to
not
them
having
more.
3 hour conversations on the phone with your rep. I thought that's Ryan. I do.
I'm trying to do like a charitable interpretation. Like it makes 3 hours like actually on the phone.
Yeah.
Like a landline. It makes sense. Like if you like going to games and stuff to be friendly with them. Yeah. I don't care about games. Right. They offer me all the time. And I'm like, nah, thank you. I have taken it a few times, but like, so I imagine there's reason to talk to them a lot more than I do. So I'll grant that. And then mm-hmm. Travis said last week that he believes the part where you overshare on something like mental health or something. And I can't remember what he said, but he could believe that part. So I think I've talked with somebody else. I won't say who too, who was on like one of the player committees and, mm-hmm. And he doesn't believe it at all. Like he talked with some of the people after our show and says, is this even believable? This is from a third source. So, and he's like, no, that wouldn't happen. Like they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't escalate it to the team that would do that.
I was just going to say, thinking of like what could have happened in like a soft spin on it that he gave, like, for whatever reason, if he did personally decide to self-exclude, whether his own decision, whether a decision he made with his family or whatever, it's a little easier to say, I accidentally got self-excluded by something I said. It wasn't me. Like I wanted to keep playing versus like taking ownership of then having to answer the question, why did you self-exclude? And so that's kind of a careful way of being like, hey, that can't get fact-checked. Like I doubt the DK rep is going to come out and come say, no, we actually self-excluded him. Like he can probably tell that story how he wants without fear of like the actual way it went down surfacing.
If let's say let's say he did self-exclude. So this is a reason to believe him, kind of, is like, let's say he did self-exclude. Right. Couldn't he just come on this show or another show and go like, I was running bad and I was just pissed and I never wanted to play DFS again. So I hit that button. I didn't know that you can't get back from it.
That ruins the narrative, though, of I'm a winning DFS player and you should pay me for my picks.
Okay. Yeah.
I agree with you. Like, that makes sense. But like, if you are struggling to add new subs and then starting a new company where you need to add new subs, like that's a hard billboard to put out there.
Right. And here's another thing too. If you're on your new site, if your account is incognito or you're staking somebody and directing them how to play or whatever the fuck he's doing, there's no proof of that anywhere.
And that's why I think that whatever the truth is there, I think that's where the interview got away from him, because kind of some of that started to compound, because then it does match up with my thing. Hey, I need to show that I'm a winning player, that I'm still active, that I'm putting skin in the game on the picks I'm playing. So I have to now say like, no, I am playing, but then how are you still playing? Then it brings up the terms of service questions, which people had, is that even allowed? And we kind of vaguely got into if that was technically legal or not, but it does, you could kind of see the spiral of just not wanting to admit I personally self-excluded, how that then led to having to describe other weird parts of that.
Yeah, definitely. That could be part of it. A bunch of comments I got too, where they wanted the projections discussion to go on much longer, but we ran out of time at the end.
Yeah.
That feedback came in. We probably could have went another 20 minutes or so, but with the gambling, the self-exclusion thing, it's even kind of, like, from the wit, like, you're a winning player, that's why people sub to your site type of thing. It's kind of weird to even get in that spot, right? Because it's like, well, why are you complaining about like your mental state if you're, you know, a stud DFS player at all? Why are you even in that spot at all?
Right. And I think that's why it's like a tough, because like, multiple things can be true, right? Like, you can be playing at those levels. You could be bad and you could be getting outplayed by the top people. You could be just running really bad. I mean, you could talk about the swings too, right? Like, you could be really good and have what, $1 million downswing if you're playing like nosebleed DFS stakes across all these sports, like all the time. So like, there's a lot of things that could lead to the point where you need to self-exclude or you go busto and have to stop playing. But that's a really, really tough pill to swallow for anyone, much less someone that's trying to sell people on giving them money for DFS tips. I thought another really interesting part of that was him saying, and I actually believe this, that his content was starting to skew more toward like the super small field high stakes stuff, which the majority of his audience isn't playing, because that's like a really interesting dynamic, right? Like, most of them want like Millie Maker level picks. And as you know, like, the strategy for the Thunderdome is wildly different.
Yeah. I still think that didn't make a ton of sense. Like, because for just getting subs, like, if you're beating the Thunderdome, like, people will sub to your site, even if they're only playing $10 GPPs. Cause they're like, oh God, this is the Tom Dwan. This is the nosebleed guy.
Well, and those nosebleeds are the perfect thing for screenshot marketing, right? They're small fields, which means you're going to win more, and they're big dollar amounts. Yes. And so it checks all the marketing boxes, high dollar amounts, the biggest names, you win more frequently. If you were just posting screenshots from your Millie Maker play, like, you'd probably lose subs. Holy cow, this guy has a negative whatever ROI in the Millie Maker these first 10 weeks of the NFL season. What am I doing?
Right. I bet that's exactly why he did that. Exactly why. It's easier to win. It's harder to win long term, though, is because the competition is so high, but it's easier to just randomly win a Thunderdome every year. And when there's only five opponents, one thing is that backs his story up is like tax purposes, because if he was losing all this money more than the subscriptions he was pulling in, he could carry over that debt year after year. So getting rid of that corporation and starting a new one, he would lose all that tax harvesting.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. So he was probably not significantly in debt in the business. well, not in debt. Like he wouldn't owe anyone, right? Like the IRS would just, so like, let's say he made $200,000 in subs the next year. If he lost $300,000 the year prior, like he wouldn't have to pay any taxes on that. And he'd still have $100,000 rollover.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that kind of backs him. All of it though, like as Travis should be writing this guy's press releases, by the way. He's defending that every quarter. But like
Petty's an investor in really good picks, I hear. Yeah.
He's his new web guy. He's running but like everything he said, like it makes it like follows, right? Mm. It's like, okay, yeah, I could understand your IT guy going, I could understand oversharing. And like Travis said, they've been, or someone said in the chat, they're cracking down on, ever since they were became sports betting legal, their whole compliance team shifted. I noticed this myself during COVID, because I took all my money off of DraftKings for the first time ever because of COVID. Like, who knows, right? Like,
yeah.
And then to put real money back on there, like I never raised my minimums because I never and it was like I had to show them my tax returns and my bank accounts, and they barely were still let me raise them. Like they are not screwing, but like obviously I'm like trying to put $20,000 on multiple times, right? And so like that's not really realistic for most people. But anyways, they didn't do that before they didn't care, or they cared a lot less, let's say. So like it's all like believe, but you can know that as a smart person, which he clearly is, right? He's not like a dummy. Like you can also plan that ahead. Like what makes sense, but it does all make sense.
And just like a somewhat related note for some people who aren't as familiar with this self-exclude stuff, just to give another story. So my college buddies, they got really into underdog pick'ems. They do not give a shit about best ball, but they love the pick'ems. They always hit me up, hey, give us a pick'em slip or whatever. And my one buddy is just like obsessed. He's playing all the sports. He was tailing DJ Mitchell on Twitter and he just loves it. Like he gets his fix. He fat fingered the self-exclude within the app. He was like hitting buttons around. I think he was trying to deposit more and literally self-excluded for 6 months. And he's just been blasting off on like pickups. He was devastated. Like I even tried to reach out to some people that I knew at Underdog Support. I was like, this is my buddy. He's completely fine. He only gave it, but they're like, we literally can't do anything.
Right.
Like the second you press that button. So he can't play for these 6 months. And it's just like, there's nothing you can do about it. And I think it speaks to some of those things you were saying that DraftKings does, these protections they take in place, because what's a thing that someone who does have a problem who self-excludes might say the next day, I was just kidding. I didn't
exactly.
mean
exactly. Yeah. And like, I harp on this all the time. Like they're just your political opponents are constantly looking for a story. Right. And so like, if you fuck up on your compliance, your self-exclude, and then they get a nice sob story to put in the New York Times and shit on gambling or shit on Underdog or whatever, they're going to do it. And you're going to wish, you know, you were a little strict, especially in the beginning now, was people are still getting used to nationwide gambling. Mm-hmm. I think they're cracking down a lot harder, and they clearly are, because why wouldn't they do it under DFS? Cause they didn't have to. So
right.
Not Underdog. They weren't even around, but you know what I mean? DraftKings and stuff. So, and then the thing I brought up in the very beginning, no one has sent, to my knowledge, you or me, any evidence on any of the accusations or anything disputing anything he said or anything from his ex-employees. Not even like one bitter ex-employee he fired 2 years ago sent me a message saying he was a jerk or anything.
I will say one thing, and maybe it was how I worded the promo tweet, but like JMac never shared the episode. So there was no one from like his audience that wasn't familiar with us. Like his like immediate, like he got in front of our audience, but we never got in front of his audience by him not sharing that episode, which I do wonder if maybe some other people would have come out of the woodwork. Hey, these are former subs who had stuff that like didn't even know this interview existed. That was one thing I was thinking about.
Huh. I didn't notice that. He didn't retweet you, huh?
Mm-mm.
You did that after the show too, right?
Yeah, because I think I had retweeted your promo link before, but that yours hadn't tagged him either. And then after the show, but it goes back to kind of like,
he did respond to some of the claims. He did respond to some things, I think.
Yeah. All I'm saying is he didn't put this episode in front of his audience that I think would have actually, he retweeted your promo. So before the show, there's a lots of questions about what happened with DFI. I'm perfectly willing to discuss it all. Okay. So maybe my thought process doesn't line up that like any one of his followers who are interested in this story, they probably saw this through.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And still nothing.
No.
And now that there's, you know, a decent amount of views and listens, you nothing, still nothing even after that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Let's talk a little, and again, yeah, if anyone has any other follow-ups, and if for some reason you guys don't know what we're talking about, go back to last week's episode. We interviewed J-Mac. It was about half about him starting his new company, what happened over at DFI, and then also those questions from the community that we passed along. Oh, go ahead.
And can I say too, like, I think we're fair to everyone involved. Mm-hmm. It might have been a little harsher that one, but I don't think a lot of people said we weren't harsh enough. And but like, you're not going to be able to like just use our platform to promote your new thing.
I think that's you're never going to appease everyone, right? Because like you said, some people said you did a really good job. Thank you for asking those hard questions. Some people said, oh, I would have gone so much harder. I always laugh when I see those because, buddy, he's not coming to do your show. Like, these people think like, I'll get him on the mic and I'll be like, you fucking scammer. You're right. This answer this question. It's like, dude, he's just going to click the X button and log off. So you can pretend you're a tough guy with all these hard hitting questions you're going to answer, but you're not going to get an interview. And so you do have to balance. You have to create a space where people feel willing to come talk and that you're going to ask questions that are important. You're not just going to let them get away with a puff piece. But you also have to provide an environment where the guest is comfortable. So I always think it's funny when people are like, oh, I would ask the toughest questions. Yeah, buddy, you would have had a 2-second interview.
Well, yes. And and also too, like, I don't think they are as good interviewers as they think. Like, I think like they would just like use insults and stuff like that and call them a scammer and a tout. And like, that's not, you're not getting to the bottom of anything here. And they clearly don't have any inside information because they didn't send us any messages. So
no. And we did, I would say I mean, you and I are notoriously lazy with the prep work we did for the show. For both the Hoop interview and the J-Mac, we do a decent amount of prep work. Actually had an outline for questions. We DM'd with multiple people trying to get information from what we thought were reputable sources. We didn't turn up anything that relevant beyond what was shared on the show.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm happy with it. I hope he's happy with it.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Sim War stuff. This was something that you brought to my attention. We, of course, were talking about the new Stochastic Sims a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago. And you mentioned that another new Sim product came out that caught your eye.
Yeah, somebody DM'd me the like beta launch of Saber Sims has their new MLB Sim product. Launching, I think only a few people have access to it now. I was going to check it out today, but Matt's Zoom broke, and we didn't have a time. I was doing stuff. He's got like, it was right before the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen screenshots though. The Sim Wars are on.
I've been thinking about it a little bit, and you would understand like the actual like machinery behind the Sims far more than me. How much of it is like the top players like yourself, you guys have these full bodied Sims, and then what gets put out as a product first, it's just like the tip of the iceberg. You got like the Run the Sims, you know, game level stuff. And now it's like, okay, well, how do we beat that? How do we do better? Oh, well, we'll peel back the onion of what we have a little bit more and then make that a product. We're not going to give you everything. We're not going to project for the field like the way people kind of want the stochastic one to do, but we'll give you this next part of it. Like, do these Sims exist like as you have it in its full form? And now it's just getting trickled out piecemeal.
That's a good question. I couldn't tell you for sure because I don't know everything about Saber Sim or Stochastics team either, but people also, they think they're really smart after somebody tells them exactly how to do something. So like, you know, before like these full field Sims were a thing, you know, 99.9% of people didn't even have an idea of how to do this, what it would look like, or anything even close to it. And then now that it's out there, people are like, oh yeah, you just make a field and then you run some sims on it, bro. It's not a big deal. So like, it looks a lot easier now after the product's been released. But the Saber Sim product looks, a lot closer to what I do, than I would like. So it's got some cool options on it. And like you said, it's the next, like another layer added to the product. And when we did our first Sim show, our first Sim Wars show, I said, the thing I fear most is that these sites will get in competition with each other and then just keep putting out better product and then probably eventually lowering the price to get the customers. And that's the direction it looks like is going to happen.
To where you like, how far off is someone like me being able to go pay $99 a month to have what you've spent years building?
Not far. And it's good enough. There's just a few things there that I do that I think are better.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you're saying from the what gap I've is seen, getting scarily close.
Yeah. It's basically over.
What, I mean, you say it with a chuckle, but you also play DFS as your livelihood. You're also smart enough to know that this is inevitable. It's just at the pace that right. It happens. Like, how are you going? Are you going to be monitoring your ROI closer and scaling back? Like, how do you plan for this?
I've been studying the NFL rosters a lot. And
DJ Dallas? I get more comments about DJ Dallas than anything else on my best ball streams.
And I'm going to do one of those anime girl, Twitch things, best ball. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's my future. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
No, yeah. The yum yum ice cream girl.
Yum yum ice cream.
Yeah.
Mingo. Arf,
arf. No, but come on, be serious. Like, is it going to tangibly affect your volume, your play? Or are you just going to go full bore until you notice like a meaningful change in like the level of competition or your ROI?
Yeah, probably. Like the more subs they get, it'll just be pointless to play.
Goodness. So like, are you calling this like this is the end? This is the beginning of the end of DFS?
I don't know. Because like 20% of the field is probably got their head in the clouds and they're not going to do anything different. Mm. The middle bucket of like people who use projections and optimizers, you know, some of them will move up and do sims. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It's not good. I don't know what to tell you. Like, yeah, I don't like it. I wish they'd stop.
Yeah. It is still like, there is an element of DFS still though, right? Where, you know, what is Levitan and Pat Mayo call them? The phone shitter bros, where like, that's not going away, right? Like the people's desire, this was another thing they were talking about on the Underdog interview with Jeremy. It's like, people still want to turn a little bit of money into a lot. Like the Millie Makers are still going to fill. I guess it's maybe is the impact, Travis says, maybe the end for people who are simming early, is it what it's actually wiping out isn't the casual player who's willing to be a losing player in exchange for entertainment, but the person who had hopes of playing full time.
Yeah, well, if you had hopes of playing full time, even 2 years ago, that was probably a bad idea. Like, of course, some people ended up making it. But, you know, that's like the 0.1%. Mm-hmm. I mean, the end for people who are simming early, that doesn't make any sense. Like I mean, it would be the end for Travis too. The thing with Travis is, you know, like, cause he makes his own projections. He has his own little game theory tricks and et cetera, et cetera. But that still won't work if like, you know, everyone's putting in like these just GTO style, you know, simmed out projections. Like if there's just like barely any edge to be had, like a mm-hmm. lot of the edge is from donkeys, you know, like the bottom percent, like just paying for the rake. And so, like, I'm not saying that for sure it's going to happen, but like, it'll hurt him too.
Yeah. I mean, it hurts everyone if there's much better players, much less players who go from what, a 75th percentile player to like the top 99th percentile right now. Like, they could be making that leap with these tools.
Yes. It's like, how many are going to do it though? Cause it's still like an expensive subscription.
Yeah. And it's still like, I guess I don't know how like that. So one thing that you had said about the stochastic one too, and I remember listening to Blender when he talked to DeColtz on his and stuff about like, there still was that element of forecasting what the field would do. And are you saying that this new SaberSim one is now more accounting?
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
And Travis says here, the more I hear Sims, the more the profit goes up. And that, I mean, I hope you're right. Like, I hope that the Sims aren't good.
Yeah.
You know, not just theirs, just maybe Sims are bullshit in general. Great. That'd be fantastic. I'll figure something else out. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I don't have your confidence, Travis.
I think that the thing to be worried about is what you described earlier, right, Brian? It is the arms race element. It's that these sites continue releasing a better product because they're trying to compete with each other. And so not only is innovation happening, but it's becoming more widely distributed. And that could happen fast with how many people we have in the sim space. Even Levitan on my show said internally at ETR that they're developing some sim stuff for their projections that they're really excited about. Who knows if they would ever release some of that as a product down the road. Like, everyone's doing it now, you know, like, yeah. This could happen very fast as people try to gain market share. And I think Run the Sims did really good job just getting their name out there early as the first, like, I mean, I don't know the timestamps on SaberSim and Run the Sims, the two that put Sim in their name, but at least they got kind of ahead of what now is the biggest buzzword in DFS.
I was thinking they should stay out of it. I mean, like, I kind of like the brand of they're the ones who make the best projections or something, like you pay for premium or whatever.
Who you're talking about, ETR?
Yeah. I thought that's who you were just referencing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then I said Run the Sims and Saber Sims, so I wasn't sure who you were talking
okay,
about.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. 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 And yeah. So I think like, I kind of, making their projections available for other people's Sims makes a lot of sense, I think. But if they wanted to do a Sim too, that'd be interesting to see what they come up with. And then Run the Sims, I guarantee Justin would have already had this if he had more funding. Maybe I'm speaking out of school. I'm assuming that if he had more funding, he probably would have, because like, same with me and my my app is like, a lot of it is like, well, how much do I want to spend to improve, to add cool things to this? It costs money, you know, like, is it worth it?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you still think like, so again, because this is me showing my not fully understanding like how the Sims work, but like your Sim is still naturally going to be different, even like some of your inputs and your special sauce. Like, there still has to be a pretty big edge of like, you have your own Sim, and then let's say hundreds of people are using the exact SaberSim, like that still has to be an advantage for you because they're all dealing with the same input. You talk about garbage in, garbage out, even if it's good in, good out, all people being on the exact same thing. We know that's not optimal.
This is how the Burrito Brothers never dupe each other. There's so many combos that you could be running the same Sim and you won't dupe each other. In these big sports like NFL, MLB. So, I wouldn't be super worried about it. MMA is tough because you can't service enough customers without getting really creative in how you're going to give them their 150. So that would be that. I wouldn't even do it, honestly. I would just do it just like Justin's Showdown product. I'd make it like almost exactly like that with a few tweaks.
Yeah. It does go back to, go ahead.
I was going to say my latest Sim, I press a button and it cracks the best NBA players' emails and sends a message from their email to DraftKings saying they have mental health issues and they don't want to play anymore. What do you think about that Sim, Travis? Would that work? Would that stop you?
That honestly is the best thing. You create a sim that gets
you like that sim
excluded. it's definitely very interesting, and I wonder too, like how I definitely would like to poke around with it when it comes out. Swotastic says they're planning on releasing it before football season for all sports. Pro plan is currently $130. They said there'll be a price increase, because that does go into the part of how easy is it to use this. Let's take someone like me who's willing to, you know, cover football closely, know the ins and outs and all of that. And then I sit down and I'm, you know, hand building my stuff. Like how easy is it for me to use this? Does this require a full scale process all of this time? Or is this like, all of a sudden, this is going to synthesize your process from 8 hours down to, you know, 30 minutes on a Sunday? Like, that's what I'm curious about.
So I do like how people are talking about it, and Matt is in the chat who owns SaberSim. So, you know, we could just ask him. Yeah, he's just said happy to walk you through it. But I did see some screenshots, and somebody was telling me about it who used it, and you could do baseball in like 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah,
you do your full. Yeah. So which is or maybe it was 10 or something. Mine's like 5 to 10 minutes. It depends. So very quick.
Mm-hmm.
Very quick. Yeah.
Yeah. Matt, how about this? I'll make you an offer. You seem like a family man. You got the baby and the Bjorn there. I think what would help us to justify bringing you on the show is if you could get in like an embroiled battle with some of your developers. SaberSim splits off. There's now one site called Saber, another called Sim, all kinds of drama. Maybe one of you's hooking up with one of each other's spouses. If you could do that, I think we could bring you on the show and put on a really entertaining interview.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah. Just challenge someone to a fight. You know, there's lots of options here.
The Colts versus Matt Hunter, like pay-per-view arm wrestling match. What sports are you playing right now, Brian? Are you just MLB and MMA?
Oh shit. Yeah. MLB. I got to change my Seattle lineup. I forgot about that. I think I got time. MLB, PGA and MMA right now.
Yeah. And how are you doing? It was a couple shows ago. Someone had mentioned you taking down an MLB night. Are you having a good season?
I took one down, but I haven't won since then. PGA. Don't get me started on PGA.
I want to get you started. What's up?
It's just like the most variance of any of the sports. It's insane because, like, I don't know. I mean, I've been in like top 10 going into Sunday, like 6 out of the last 8 weekends. And like, I'll finish 380th or something. Like, it's just not even fucking close. Like, you might as well not even look at PGA until Sunday, and if 30 minutes before the last ball goes in the hole. Like, it's I'm just thinking about like Big T's win and RBX's win, and they're just like leading the whole time. Sunday's no sweat, you know.
You have an orgy Saturday night because you already have it in the bag. what you're saying is, and I've always gotten pushback because you'll see, you know, people be like, oh, the cut sweat and PGA DFS is like so pure. It's one of the funnest sweats. Like, what you described has always been my experience playing PGA, and I suck at it, but like the sweat element of being like, oh, I have this good team, and then like you blink and it just is completely not relevant. Like, you can't get your hopes up. Like, I don't call that a good sweat. Like, a good sweat is if like I have a chance and then you get to root for that. It's not if it's like ping ponging all over the place and you don't know what the fuck is going on.
That's fair. But when you're playing 150, it's a little different because I'm
sweating. If I had 150, I'd have a sweat too, is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. It's true though, because like I'm trying to get guys or hope that guys make the cut. So yeah. I know there's some lineups that are doing well, but like, it doesn't matter yet. Really. It's just, it's good that they're doing well. I just know I need Tommy Fleetwood to make the cut or whoever, you know? And so like, you're sweating the like specific players around
for
Friday.
The portfolio.
And then after that, your weekend, now you have so many lineups. They were 6 of 6 and you're like, generally, okay, I know in the remaining 6 of 6s, I need Jordan Spieth to go off. So now you're kind of like rooting for certain players. And then on Sunday, you got a couple lineups And usually you're not in the top 10. So you want chaos to happen, right?
So would you say you have less of an edge in PGA relative to other sports, or would you say you have the same edge, but because the sport is so variant, it's just going to take you years and years and years to realize it relative to other sports?
Probably. I'm really more talking about the short-term variance of just
right
being in first on Saturday doesn't mean shit. Or it means very, like, you'll look at like Nelson produces like these, you know, live sim estimates of how much your lineup's worth. Like, you know, a couple weeks ago, like my lineup was worth like 15 grand or something. It's like, no, it's not. Like, he's probably right. I'm not saying he's wrong, but like in golf, like that just rarely fucking happens. Like, you could easily finish in like 600th when you're third going in.
Do you think there's an element? Cause like, I know you like golf. Like, it's probably one of the sports that you do. You like to play it. You seem to like to watch it a little bit. Like, if the prize pools and everything were the exact same, but it was some sport you didn't give a shit about, let's just say it was like tennis or badminton or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, is there an element of you just genuinely like golf, so you continue to put yourself through this masochistic exercise?
That might be part of it. And I just denying that reality, Pete. You might have just sat me down
today.
Yeah, you might have just sat me down at the therapy office. But I imagine if tennis was playing Millie to first, I'd be playing the shit out of tennis.
Oh, you're right. Okay. Definitely. So because it still is the biggest prize pool is going for non.
It's huge. PGA DFS is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that's your edge in PGA is it's huge and there's dumb people in the world. Congratulations.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds like you're more saying the latter thing where it's like, you still have your edge, but it just takes you so long to realize it because of the variance.
Yeah. I mean, according to Post Lock Sims, there's edge to be had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done fine in PGA over my career, but it's been pretty brutal recently. But like, I mean, I'm getting there. I'm just frustrated with PGA.
I think you, Brett, I think you need to start, because you are you don't let anyone in on your sweats, because it's just like another day at the office. The only time I learn about your wins are when people mention it in the Discord or on Twitter. I think you need to start like reverse mushing yourself. You know, I think you need to start posting a team, you know, getting the community behind you. I think you need to embrace it.
Yeah. The ones that frustrate me the most is when people say, I'm proud of this team. Like, you're proud of this team. That's what you
are. I've probably said that after a basketball game. No,
you did not.
I don't think I have, but I'm sure I've said some sentiment along that. I'm really proud of what I did in this draft.
You're proud of your team. Oh, my God. So maybe I'll do that, ironically.
He said while wearing a Tom Brady Tampa Bay Bucks jersey. Right? I'm proud of this team. I'm
really proud of this one.
Ugh. Can't us hand builders be proud of a really sharply constructed team we made, Brian?
You're proud of whatever you want, I guess, but oh my God.
Yeah, there's a few things I'm proud of in my life. I'm proud of my marriage, proud of my beautiful daughter April, and I'm proud of the single entry bullet I had in the spy.
If you won that spy finally, you probably would be proud of your fucking team too.
Oh, Brian, if I win the spy, I mean, I'm coming on camera and I'm just dropping my pants, put my nutsack on the desk, and just 60 minutes to just a close up of my balls.
An hour straight of close up.
Well, it
on
is
your
like
phone.
Getting back to like, I've mentioned this in a few spots, and like people have been asking me about my like DFS programming for this season, you know, just because I have gone so all in on best ball drafting. And like, there is an element of like DFS content now that it's still fun. It's a really fun puzzle to put together, but man, like my Monday morning shows were just like depressing. Like I started to dread them. And like when I do a best ball stream, I'm proud of those streams, Brian. No, I get excited to do those shows. Like it's fun. And I'm like, why am I just like doing this exercise on Mondays where I'm like, yeah, I made this decent team, had a good low-owned guy here, didn't come together, didn't min cash. Another day, let's update the spreadsheet, still taking a bath. And I'm like, you know, maybe I am going to make a slight shift this year, review other things, maybe do more drafting style games where I'm just like not as miserable on Monday mornings from a content perspective.
I feel like if you don't want to do it, don't do it. I think NFL though, NFL's like the biggest edge, even though I can't fucking beat it for some reason, but NFL is because there's just so many people playing it. They're so huge. And the reason you lose all the time or whatever, like it's so hard to win, is because they're so big comparatively to all the other sports. Like the GMAC thing we talked about earlier. If you want to become a huge, you know, get 30,000 followers as a tout, play a 6 max. Don't play 150,000 max entry because you're never going to fucking win it. You know, so like, I mean, but that applies, like people enter the $5 with 70,000 entries and expect to, you know, win every once in a while. And it's like, if you were average and you enter once, you're going to win like once every 70,000 years.
You know? Right. Exactly.
It's extremely hard. And even the SPY is two or three times or bigger, way bigger than all the other sports. You know, even the PGA one, it's like two, three, four times bigger.
Yeah. I guess like, you know, when we have the talk like this here, you know, people in the chat, you know, getting our funeral here for DFS, I am actually curious, is that going to carry over? So like a ton of my audience, I think, plays similar contests to me. You know, they play the Red Zone, they play the SPY, the Power Sweep, the single entry 3 max contest. I am curious, like, is everyone heading into this year with the same level of enthusiasm? All of my hand builders out there, let's call them the content hounds, you know, the guys who are putting in the work, but don't necessarily have the full sim level process. Like, is everyone, leave this in the comments, because I'm legitimately curious. I'm not just engagement farming. Like, I want to know, does everyone have that same enthusiasm for the DFS season this year with your eyes wide open that it is an entertainment product, that the tools are getting so good, the edges are diminishing, it's really hard to beat the rake, we're going to lose a ton of weeks. Are we still signing up for that? Deposit Kingdom Nation. I'm genuinely asking, because that feedback will go a long way in knowing and helping me decide what kind of DFS content I do.
That's a good question. Yeah. Or, and also like maybe people disagree with me, which is totally fair. And I don't know everything. So maybe I'm exaggerating the effect this is going to have in the near future, which is entirely possible. It might be like too pricey for the market and just some guys get a little bit better, you know, and it doesn't change that much. But like all these markets tend towards efficiency. And so it's like bound to happen either way.
Yeah. I think the other thing too, that's one thing that's a little bit nice, I would say, for DFS relative to best ball, because like there's no roadmap for contests for best ball. Like, yeah, you can know best ball mania, 150 entries, $25. You could like do a bankroll on that, but then they put out some of these better, smaller field contests and you're trying to, it's like your bankroll for that is kind of like a moving target, at least for DFS. It's kind of like, you know, how many weeks there are, you know, which contests are going to be available and you can plot it out ahead of time in a way that I think is really good for your like mental health and understanding those swings of earmarking that money. So that is like one benefit of like, hey, maybe you head into this season with a little bit scaled back bankroll and you're like, yeah, I'm still going to play, but like, I'm not going to be shot taking as much if I'm bleeding out early and I have this money set aside and I'm still going to play lower stuff. But I do think maybe that element is a good thing to bring into a much more competitive DFS space.
Definitely. Yeah. And like, you could win $1 million in a few hours. You can't really do that in any other gambling, like for 10 bucks, you know?
Yeah.
So that'll still bring them in. That milkshake will still bring him into the yard.
Brian's milkshake brings him into the yard here on Lulz. Appreciate you. Classic Lulz episode. We got a site going belly up. We talking about the JMAC DFS site drama, the sim wars. Is DFS dying? What content is Pete going to do this year? I feel like, you know, every once in a while we have these quintessential Lulz episodes, Brian. I think this one hit all the marks.
And I just want to say, Pete, that my mental health is fantastic. Never one problem ever with gambling.
You want to shout out your rep here?
Shout out my rep, Dan, I think. So I am happy and healthy and never any. So no matter what anyone else says, okay?
I have jokes to make, but now I'm like legitimately worried. But I will say I do not have a rep. I have angled for a rep over the years. I think I've done a lot of good promotion for DraftKings with all my SPY reviews. I've never gotten a penny from them. I've had to pay for my DraftKings sweatshirt. I've truly never gotten a single, they did a listener league. They did a rake free listener league. That's the one thing that DraftKings has done for me. Yeah. But otherwise I'm completely dead to them, Brian.
Yeah. Well, you got to enter. Usually they just they give you an extra ticket or something. So
they don't even give you that. They give those to Davis because Davis grinds all the missions and I can't be bothered to do that.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Audio of this, as always, will go up. Seriously, let me know in the comments, what kind of DFS action you're playing. Are you scaling up or down relative to last year? That'll be an interesting straw poll for me to check out. Anything else on your end, Brian?
No. Did the RG extension break for everyone? I think it did. And it did for me anyways. And so I think we're going to put it for free on our app, Pete. Because they might not be bringing it back.
Okay. Gotcha. All so right. That's good to know.
I know you use it too, right? I use that all the time. So someone asked how much I have of Golfer and I can't even check because I usually use that app.
Yeah. What's so funny is I've had that app for so long that I completely forgot it was RotoGrinders and I thought it was just a built-in DraftKings thing because I got so used to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
multiple people confirming.
It didn't get banned. It didn't get banned. They changed their HTML because our app broke too on it.
Okay.
So there's that. And if there's MMA, I'll have my stuff up tomorrow or no, for Saturday.
For Saturday.
Yeah.
Awesome. I am doing randomizer tonight. Some of you guys might know him, Most Crucified from Underdog, Trill Withers show, goes by Sexual Jumanji. Very funny dude. We're doing the show earlier tonight. He had plans, so that will be at 5 p.m. So randomizer at 5 p.m. And then also Davis and I just recorded a podcast with Patrick Laird earlier this morning. It was fun to check in with him before he heads off to Bucks training camp and also got his thoughts on all the current running back holdout conversation and how he would handle it in those spots. So I'll post that tomorrow. The audio will be up on the Takecast as well. So keep an eye out for that. Appreciate you guys in the chat as always. For Brian, I'm Pete. This is Lulz. We'll see you guys next time.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save.